and Fawley smiled round at them. "Well then, lads, it's been something, ain't it?"
"Shut up, weakest," scowled Dow. "Bethel ain't got nothing against you. You're coming back."
"In case I don't, though, it's been something."
The dog man nodded to him, awkward. It was the same dirty, scarred-up faces as usual, but grimmer than ever. None of them liked letting one of their own put himself in danger. But Fawley was right. Someone had to do it, and he was the best suited. Sometimes weakness is a better shield than strength, the dog man reckoned. Bethod was an evil bastard, but he was a clever one. The Shanker were coming, and he needed the warning. Hopefully he'd be grateful for it. They walked together down to the edge of the trees, looking out towards the path. It crossed over the old bridge and wound down into the valley, from there to the gates of Carlium, into Bethod's fortress. Fawley took a deep breath, and the dog man clapped him on his shoulder.
"Luck, Fawley. Good luck."
"And to you."
He squeezed Dogman's hand in his for a minute.
"To all of you lads, eh?"
And he turned and marched off towards the bridge, with his head up high.
"Luck, Fawley!"
shouted Black Dow, startling them all. He turned round for a minute, the weakest, stood on top of the bridge, and he grinned. Then he was gone. Three Trees took a deep breath.
"Weapons," he said, "just in case Bethod don't want to hear sense. And wait for the signal, eh?"
It seemed a long time waiting, up in the leaves, staying quiet and still, looking down at all them new walls. The dog man lay on his belly, bow near at hand, watching, waiting, wondering how Fawley was doing in there. A long, tense time. Then he saw them. Horsemen coming out the nearest gate, riding over one of the new bridges, crossing the river. They'd got a cart at the back. Dogman wasn't sure why they'd have a cart, but he didn't like it any. No sign of Fawley, and he wasn't sure whether that was a good thing or a bad. They came quick, spurring up the side of the valley, up the steep path towards the trees and the stream and the old stone bridge across it, right at the Dogman. He could hear the hooves thumping on the dirt, close enough to count now and take a good look at. Spears, shields, and good armor. Helmets and mail, 10 of them, and 2 others sitting on the cart either side of the driver, carrying some sorts of things that looked like little bows on blocks of wood. He didn't know what they were about, and he didn't like not knowing. He was the one wanted to be giving them the surprises. He wriggled back through the brush on his stomach, sloshed through the stream, and hurried to the edge of the trees, where he could get a good view of the old bridge. Three Trees, Tull, and Dow were standing round the near side of it, and he waved over to them. Couldn't see Grim. He must have been off in the woods away beyond. He made the sign for horsemen, held up his fist to say 10, hand flat on his chest to say armor. Dow took up his sword and axe, ran up into a bunch of broken rocks high up beside the bridge, keeping low and quiet. Tull slid down the bank into the stream, luckily no more than knee-deep right then, plastered his big self against the far side of the arch with his great long sword held up above the water. Made the dog man a bit nervous. He could see Tull so clear from where he was sitting. Still, the riders wouldn't see him at all if they came straight up the path. They'd only be expecting one man alone, and dog man hoped they wouldn't come too careful. He hoped, because if they took the time to check, it'd be a fucking disaster. He watched Three Trees strap his shield on his arm, draw his sword, stretch his neck out. Then he just stood, waiting, big and solid, blocking the path on the near side of the bridge, seeming all alone in the world. The dog man could hear the hoofbeats loud now, and the clattering of the cart's wheels out beyond the trees. He pulled out a few arrows and planted them in the earth, point down, where he could get to them quick, doing his best to swallow his fear. His fingers were shaking all the while, but that didn't matter. They'd work all right when they needed to.
"Wait for the signal," he whispered to himself. "Wait for the signal."
He knocked a shaft to his bow and half drew the string, taking aim down towards the bridge. Damn it, but he needed to piss bad. The first spear point showed itself over the crest of the hill, then others. Bobbing helmets, mailed chests, horses' faces, bit by bit the riders came up towards the bridge. The cart rolled behind, with its driver and its two funny passengers, pulled by a big shaggy cart horse. The rider up front saw Three Trees now, waiting for him over the hump of the bridge, and he spurred on forward. The dogman breathed a little easier as the others trotted after him in a clump, all eagerness. Fawley must have said as he was told, they were expecting only one. Dogman could see Tull peering up from underneath the mossy arch as the horses clopped above him. By the dead, his hands were shaking. He was worried he'd let the arrow fly half-drawn and ruin the whole thing. The cart stopped on the far bank. The two men on it stood up and pointed their strange bows at Three Trees. The dogman got himself a nice aim on one of them and drew the string back all the way. Most of the riders were on the bridge by now, horses shying and stirring about, unhappy at being packed in so tight. The one at the front reined up in front of Three Trees, spear pointing at him. The old boy didn't back away a step, though. Not him. He just frowned up, not giving the riders any room to get around him, keeping them choked up on the bridge.
"Well, well," the dogman heard their leader saying. "Rud Three Trees. We thought you was long dead, old man."
He knew the voice, one of Bethod's carls from way back. Bad Enough, they called him.
"Reckon I've got a fight or two left in me,"
said Three Trees, still giving no ground. Bad Enough took a look about him, squinting into the trees, sense enough to see he was in a poor position, but not too careful.
"Where's the rest of you? Where's that fucker Dow, eh?"
Three Trees shrugged.
"It's just me. Back to the mud, eh?"
The dog man could just see Bad Enough grinning under his helmet.
"Shame. Hoped I'd be the one to kill that dirty bastard."
Dogman winced, half expecting Dow to come flying out of those rocks right then, but there was no sign of him. Not yet. Waiting for the signal, for once.
"Where's Bethod?"
asked Three Trees.
"The king don't come out for the likes of you. Anyhow, he's off in Angland, kicking the Union's asses. Prince Calder's taking care of things while he's gone."
Three Trees snorted.
"Prince, is it now? I remember him sucking on his mother's tit. He could scarcely do that right." "A lot's changed, old man. All kinds of things."
By the dead, Dogman was wishing they'd get on with it one way or another. He could hardly keep the piss in. "Wait for the signal," he was mouthing to himself, just to try and keep his hands steady.
"The flatheads are everywhere," Three Trees was saying. "They'll be coming south by next summer. Sooner, maybe. Something needs doing." "Well, why don't you come with us, eh? You can warn Calder yourself. We bought a cart for you to ride in. Man of your age shouldn't have to walk."
A couple of the other riders laughed at that, but Three Trees didn't join them.
"Where's Fawley?" he growled. "Where's the weakest?"
There was more sniggering from the horsemen.
"Oh, he's nearby," said Bad Enough. "He's real close. Why don't you get in the cart and we'll take you right to him? And we can all sit round and talk about flatheads nice and peaceful."
The dogman didn't like this, not at all. He'd got a nasty feeling.
"You must take me for some new kind of fool," said Three Trees. "I'm going nowhere till I've seen Fawley."
Bad Enough frowned at that.
"You're in no state to be telling us what you'll do. You might have been the big man once, but you're come to less than nothing, and that's a fact. Now give up your blade and get in the fucking cart like I told you before I lose my temper."
He tried to nudge his horse forward again, but Three Trees wasn't budging.
"Where's Fawley?" he growled. "And I'll have a straight answer or I'll have your guts."
Bad Enough grinned over his shoulder at his mates and they grinned back.
"All right, old man, since you're asking. Calder wanted us to wait for this, but I've got to see the look on your face. The weakest's in the cart. Leastways, most of them is."
He smiled and let something drop from his saddle. A canvas sack with something in it. Dogman could guess already what it was. It hit the ground near Three Trees' feet. The something rolled out, and the dogman could see on the old boy's face that he'd guessed right. Fawley's head. Well, that was it, of course. Fuck the signal. Dogman's first arrow stuck one of the men on the cart right through his chest, and he screamed and tumbled over into the back, dragging the driver with him. It was a good shot, but there was no time to think on that. He was far too busy fumbling for another arrow and shouting. Didn't even know what he was shouting, just that he was. Grim must have been shooting as well. One of the carles on the bridge gave a yell, fell off his horse, and splashed into the stream. Three Trees was down in a crouch, hiding behind his shield, backing off while Bad Enough prodded at him with his spear, kicking his horse off the bridge and onto the path on our side. The rider behind pushed around the side of him, keen to get off the bridge, coming close beside the rocks.
"Fucking bastards!"
Dow flew out of the stones above him, barreled into the rider. They tumbled down together, a mess of limbs and weapons, but the dogman could see that Dow was on top. His axe went up and down a couple of times, quick, one less to worry on. Dogman's second arrow went well wide of the mark. He was so busy shouting his head off, but it stuck one of the horses in the rump, and that turned out better than anything. It started rearing and thrashing about, and soon all the horses were milling and crying while their riders cursed and bumbled around, spears going every which way, noise and mess on all sides. The horseman at the back split in half all of a sudden, blood spraying everywhere. The Thunderhead had come up from the stream, got round behind them. There's no armor that could stop a blow like that. The giant roared and swung the great length of bloody metal over his head again. The next in line got his shield up in time, but he might as well not have bothered. The blade hacked a big chunk out of it, tore his head open, and hammered him out of the saddle. The blow was that strong, it clubbed the horse down too. One of them had got his mount turned now, bringing up his spear to stab at Tull from the side. Before he could, he grunted and jerked, arching his back. Dogman could see the feathers sticking from his side. Grim must have shot him, and he tumbled down. His foot caught in the stirrup, and he hung there, swinging. He was groaning and moaning and trying to right himself, but his horse was plunging now along with the others, making him dance, wrong way up, smacking his head against the side of the bridge. He dropped his spear in the stream, tried to pull himself up, then his horse half-landed a kick on his shoulder and knocked him free. He went down under the milling hooves, and the dogman paid him no more mind. The second archer was still sitting up on the cart. He was getting over his shock now, and lining up his funny bow on Three Trees, still squatting down behind his shield. Dogman shot at him, but he was hurrying and yelling, and his shaft missed, and he hit the driver beside him in his shoulder, just got up from the back of the cart, knocked him back down again. The weird bow twanged, and Three Trees jerked back from his shield. The dogman was worried for a minute, then he saw that the arrow split the heavy wood and punched on through, but stopped just short of catching Three Trees in the face. It was lodged there through his shield, feathers sticking out one side, point out the other. "That's an evil little bow," Dogman thought. He heard Tull roar and saw another rider fly off into the stream. Another dropped with one of Grim's arrows in his back. Dow turned and chopped the back legs out from under Bad Enough's horse with his sword, and it stumbled and slid, pitching him off onto the ground. The last couple were trapped. Dow and Three Trees at one end of the bridge, Tull at the other, too tight with frightened, riderless horses for them to turn around or nothing, at the mercy of Grim out in the woods. He wasn't in a merciful mood, it seemed, and it didn't take him long to pick him off. The one with the bow tried to make a break for it, chucking his bit of wood away and jumping down from the cart. Dogman thought nice and careful about his aiming this time, and his shaft got the archer right between the shoulders and knocked him on his face before he could get more than a few paces. He had a go at crawling, but he wasn't crawling far. The driver of the cart showed his face again, groaning and grabbing at the arrow in his shoulder. The dogman didn't usually kill men that were down, but he reckoned today was an exception. His arrow got the driver through the mouth, and that was him dealt with. Dogman could see one of the riders limping away, one of Grim's arrows in his leg, and lined him up with his last shaft. Three Trees got there first, though, and stuck him through the back with his sword. There was another one still moving, struggling up to his knees, and the dogman took an aim on him. Before he could loose, Dow stepped up and hacked his head off, blood everywhere. Horses still milling, screaming, slipping on the slick stones of the bridge. Dogman could see bad enough now, the last one going. He must have lost his helmet when he fell off his horse. He was struggling in the stream on his hands and knees, slowed up by all that weight of mail. He dropped his shield and his spear to make better time running for it, but he hadn't realized he was coming right at the dogman.
"Get him alive!" shouted Three Trees.
Tull set off down one bank, but he was making slow progress, slipping and sliding in the mud the cart churned up.
"Get him alive!"
Dow was after him too, splashing and cursing in the water. Bad enough was close now. The dogman could hear his scared gasping as he struggled down the stream. He howled as Dogman's arrow thudded into his leg just below the bottom of his mail coat. He toppled sideways onto the bank, blood leaking into the muddy water. He started dragging himself up the wet turf beside the stream.
"That's it, Dogman!" shouted Three Trees. "Alive!"
The Dogman slid out the trees and down the bank through the water. He pulled his knife out. Tull and Dow were still a little ways off, hurrying towards him. Bad enough rolled over in the mud, his face screwed up with the pain of the arrow in his leg. He held his hands up.
All right, I'll go."
"You what?" asked the dogman, looking down at him. He said again, looking mightily surprised, hand gripped to his neck. There was blood pouring out between his fingers, down the front of his wet mail. Dow splashed up beside them and stood there looking down.
"Well, that's the end of that," he said.
"What you do that for?"
shouted Three Trees, hurrying over.
"Hey?"
asked the dogman. Then he looked down at his knife. It was all bloody.
"Oh."
That's when he saw it was him as had cut Bad Enough's throat.
"We could have asked him questions," said Three Trees. "He could have took a message back to Calder, told him who did this and why."
"Wake up, Chief,"
muttered Tull Duru, already wiping his sword down.
"No one cares a shit for the old ways no more. Besides, they'll be after us soon enough. No point letting them know more than we have to."
Dow clapped the dogman on the shoulder.
"You were right to do it. This bastard's head'll do for a message."
Dogman wasn't sure Dow's approval was something he was after, but it was a bit late now. It took Dow a couple of chops to get Bad Enough's head off. He carried it, swinging by its hair, with as little care or worry as he'd carry a bag of turnips. He grabbed a spear out of the stream on his way, found a spot he liked.
"Things ain't the way they used to be,"
Three Trees was muttering as he strode off down the bank towards the bridge, where Grimm was already picking over the bodies. The dogman followed him, watching Dow stick Bad Enough's head on the spear, shoving the blunt end into the ground, stepping back, hands on hips, to admire his work. He shifted it a bit to the right, then back to the left, until he'd got it nice and straight. He grinned over at the dogman.
"Perfect," he said.
"What now, Chief?"
Tull was asking.
"What now?"
Three Trees was stooping down on the bank, washing his bloody hands in the river.
"What do we do?" asked Dow.
The old boy stood up slowly, wiped his hands on his coat, taking his time, thinking on it.
"South. We bury Fawley on the way. We take these horses here, since they'll be coming after us now, and we head south. Tull, you better unhitch that cart horse. He's the only one as'll carry you."
"South?" asked the Thunderhead, looking confused. "South to where?"
"Angland."
"Angland?" asked the dogman, and he could tell they were all thinking it.
"For what? Ain't they fighting down there?"
"Course they are. That's why I've a mind to go."
Dow frowned.
"Us? What have we got against the Union?"
"No, fool," said Three Trees. "I've a mind to fight along with them."
"With the Union?" asked Tull, his lip curling up. "With those bloody women? That ain't our fight, Chief."
"Any fight against Bethod is my fight now. I mean to see the end of him."
Once he'd thought on it, the dogman had never yet seen Three Trees change his mind, never once.
"Who's with me?"
he asked. They all were, of course. It was raining. thin rain making the whole world damp, soft as a maiden's kiss, as they say, though the dog man could hardly remember what one of those felt like. Rain seemed right somehow for the occasion. Dow was done with piling the dirt, and he sniffed and dug the spade down into the earth beside the grave. It was a long way from the road, a good long way. They didn't want no one finding it and digging Fawley up. They all gathered round, just five now, looking down. It was a long time since they'd had anyone to bury among them. The Shanker got Logan, of course, not too long ago, but they never had found the body. There might have been just one less in the band, but it seemed to the dogman like there was a lot missing. Three Trees frowned, taking a moment, thinking out what to say. It was just as well he was the chief and had to find the words, because Dogman didn't reckon he could have found a thing. After a minute, Three Trees started speaking, slow as the light fading at sunset.
"This was a weak man here. The weakest, that's a fact. That was his name, and ain't that a joke? To call a man the weakest, the worst fighter they could find to surrender to Nine Fingers. Weak fighter, no doubt, but strong heart, say I."
"Aye," said Grimm.
"Strong heart," said Tal Duru.
"The strongest," mumbled the dogman.
He had a bit of a lump in the throat, being honest. Three Trees nodded to himself.
"It takes some bones to meet your death as well as he did. To walk to it with no complaint, to ask for it. And not for his own sake, but for others, that he didn't even know."
Three Trees clenched his teeth and took his moment, looking down at the earth. They all did.
"That's all I've got to say. Back to the mud with you, Fawley. We're the poorer, and the ground's the richer for it."
Dow knelt down and set his hand on the fresh-turned soil.
"Back to the mud," he said.
The dogman thought for a minute there might be a tear dripping off his nose, but it had to be only the rain. This was Black Dow, after all. He got up and walked away with his head down, and the others followed him, one by one, off towards the horses.
"Fare you well, Fawley," said the dogman. "No more fear."
He reckoned now that he was the coward of the band. Chapter 43 Misery. Giselle frowned. Ardy was taking her time. She never took her time. She was always there when he arrived, at whatever spot had been arranged. He didn't like having to wait for her one bit. He always had to wait for her letters, and that rankled as it was. Standing here like an idiot, it made him feel even more of a slave than he did already. He frowned up at the grey skies. There were a few spots of rain falling, just to match his mood. He felt one from time to time, a tiny pinprick on his face. He could see the drops making circles in the grey surface of the lake, making pale streaks against the green of the trees, the grey of the buildings. The dark shape of the House of the Maker was rendered hazy by them. He frowned at that building with particular displeasure. He hardly knew what to make of it now. The whole thing had been like some feverish nightmare, and, like a nightmare, he had decided simply to ignore it and pretend it never happened. He might have succeeded, too, except that the bloody thing was always looming on the edge of his vision, whenever he stepped out of the door, reminding him the world was full of mysteries he did not understand, seething just below the surface.
"Damn it," he muttered. "And damn that lunatic Byers as well."
He frowned across the damp lawns. The rain was keeping people away from the park, and it was emptier than he had seen it in a long time. A couple of sad-looking men sat listlessly on benches, nursing their own personal tragedies, and there were passers-by on the paths, hurrying from somewhere to wherever. One was coming towards him now, wrapped up in a long cloak. Giselle's frown vanished. It was her, he could tell. She had her hood pulled right down over her face. He knew it was a cold day, but this seemed a touch dramatic. He had never thought she was the type to be put off by a few spots of rain. Still, he was glad to see her, ridiculously glad. He smiled and hastened forward. Then, when they were a couple of paces apart, she pushed the hood back. Giselle gasped with horror. There was a great purple bruise across her cheek, around her eye, the corner of her mouth. He stood there frozen for a moment, wishing stupidly that he was hurt instead of her. The pain would have been less. He realized he'd clamped one hand over his mouth, eyes bulging like a nervous little girl at a spider in the bath, but he couldn't stop himself. Ardy only scowled.
"What? Did you never see a bruise before?"
"Well, yes, but are you all right?"
"Of course I am."
She stepped around him and started walking off down the path. He had to hurry to catch her up.
"It's nothing. I fell is all. I'm a clumsy fool. Always have been, all my life."
She said it with some bitterness, it seemed to him.
"Is there anything I can do?" "What could you do? Kiss it better?"
If they'd been alone, he wouldn't have minded trying, but her frown showed him what she thought of that idea. It was strange. The bruises should have repelled him, but they didn't. Not at all. Rather, he had an almost overpowering urge to take her in his arms, to stroke her hair, to murmur soothing words. Pathetic. Probably she would slap him if he tried. Probably he would deserve it. She didn't need his help. Besides, he couldn't touch her. There were people around, damn them, eyes everywhere. You never knew who might be watching. The thought made him more than a little nervous.
"Ardy, aren't we taking a risk? I mean, what if your brother were to..."
She snorted.
"Forget about him. He won't do anything. I've told him to keep his nose out of my business."
Giselle had to smile. He imagined that must have been quite an amusing scene.
"Besides, I hear that you're all leaving for Angland on the next tide, and I could hardly let you go without saying goodbye, now could I?" "I wouldn't have done that," he said, horrified again. It hurt just hearing her say the word goodbye. "I mean, well, I'd have let them sail without me before I would have done that."
"Huh." They walked along in silence for a moment, skirting the lake, both with their eyes on the gravel. It was hardly the bitter-sweet farewell that he had pictured so far. Just bitter. They passed among the trunks of some willow trees, their branches trailing in the water below. It was a secluded spot, screened from prying eyes. Giselle reckoned he was unlikely to find one better for what he had to say. He glanced sideways at her and took a deep breath.
"Ardy, I don't know how long we'll be away. I mean, I suppose it could be months."
He chewed at his top lip. It was not coming out at all as he had hoped. He had practiced this speech 20 times at least, staring in his mirror until he got just the right expression. Serious, confident, slightly wheedling. Now, though, the words came out in a foolish rush.
"I hope that, I mean, perhaps, I hope that you'll wait for me. I dare say I'll still be here. I've nothing else to do. But don't worry, you'll have a lot to think about in Angland. War, honour, glory, and all that. You'll soon forget about me."
"No!" he shouted, catching hold of her arm. "No, I won't!" He pulled his hand away quickly, worried someone might see. At least she was looking at him now, somewhat surprised, maybe, at how fierce his denial had been, though not half as surprised as he was. Giselle blinked down at her. A pretty girl, certainly, but too dark, too tanned, too clever by half, simply dressed, with no jewels, and with a great ugly bruise across her face. She would hardly have excited much comment in the officer's mess. How was it that she seemed to him the most beautiful woman in the world? The Princess Therese was an unwashed dog beside her. The clever words leaked out of his mind, and he spoke without thinking, looking her straight in the eye. Maybe this was what honesty felt like.
"Look, Ardy,
I know you think I'm an ass, and, well, I dare say I am, but I don't plan always to be one. I don't know why you even look at me, and I don't know much about this sort of thing, but, well, I think about you all the time. I hardly think about anything else anymore.
He took another deep breath.
I think...
He glanced round again, just to check that no one was watching.
I think I love you.
She spluttered with laughter.
You really are an ass, she said.
Despair. He was utterly crushed. He couldn't breathe for disappointment. His face screwed up, his head drooped, and he stared down at the ground. There were tears in his eyes, actual tears. Pitiful.
But I'll wait. Joy. It swelled in his chest and burst out in a little girlish sob. He was helpless. It was ridiculous, the power she had over him. The difference between misery and happiness was the right word from her. She laughed again. Look at you, you fool!
She reached up and touched his face, rubbed a tear from his cheek with her thumb.
I'll wait, she said, and she smiled at him, that crooked smile.
The people had faded, the park, the city, the world. Giselle stared down at Adi, for how long he could not have said, trying to stamp every detail of her face into his mind. He had a feeling, for some reason, that the memory of that smile might have to get him through a lot.
The docks were heaving with activity, even for the docks. The wharves boiled with people. The air shook and rattled with their din. Soldiers and supplies poured endlessly up the slippery gangways and onto the ships. Crates were hauled, barrels were rolled, hundreds of horses were dragged and pushed and kicked aboard, eyes bulging, mouths frothing. Men grunted and groaned, heaved at wet ropes, strained at wet beams, sweating and shouting in the spitting rain, slipping around on the slick decks, running here and there in epic confusion. Everywhere people embraced, kissed, waved to each other. Wives saying goodbye to husbands, mothers to sons, children to fathers, all equally bedraggled. Some put a brave face on it, some wept and wailed, others did not care. Spectators come simply to witness the madness. It all meant nothing to Giselle, leaning on the weathered rail of the ship that would carry him to Angland. He was sunk in a terrible gloom, nose running, hair plastered to his scalp with wet. Adi was not there, and yet she was everywhere. He would hear her voice above the din, calling his name. He would glimpse her out of the corner of his eye, looking at him, and his breath would catch in his throat. He would smile, half raise his hand to wave. Then he would see it was not her. Some other dark-haired woman smiling at some other soldier. His shoulders would slump again. Each time the disappointment was sharper. He realized now that he had made a terrible mistake. Why the hell had he asked her to wait for him? Wait for what? He could not marry her, that was a fact. Impossible. But the thought of her even looking at another man made him feel sick. He was wretched. Love. He hated to admit it, but it had to be. He had always regarded the whole notion with contempt, a stupid word, a word for bad poets to harp on and foolish women to chatter about, a thing found in childish stories and with no relevance to the real world, where relationships between men and women were simple matters of fucking and money. Yet here he was, mired in a horrible bog of fear and guilt, lust and confusion, loss and pain. Love. What a curse.
I'd like to see Adi, murmured Caspar wistfully.
Giselle turned to stare at him.
What? What did you say? It's quite a sight to see, said the lieutenant, holding his hands up. That's all.
Everyone was a little careful around him since that card game, as if he might blow up at any moment. Giselle turned sullenly back to the crowds.
There was some kind of a commotion down below them. A single horseman was forcing his way through the chaos, spurring a well-lathered horse with frequent shouts of,
"Move!"
Even in the rain, the wings on the rider's helmet glittered, a knight herald.
"Bad news for someone," murmured Casper.
Giselle nodded. "Looks like us." He was indeed making directly for their ship, leaving a trail of bemused and angry soldiers and workmen behind him. He swung out of the saddle and strode purposefully up the gangplank towards them, face grim, bright polished armor covered with moisture and jingling with every step.
"Captain Luther?" he asked.
"Yes,"
said Giselle.
"I'll fetch the colonel."
"No need. My message is for you."
"It is?"
"High Justice Morovia requires your presence at his offices. Immediately. It would be best if you took my mount."
Giselle frowned. He did not like the taste of this at all. There was no reason that he could see for a knight herald to be bringing messages to him, except that he had been inside the house of the Maker. He wanted nothing more to do with that. He wanted it in the past, forgotten, along with Baez and his Northmen and that disgusting cripple.
"The High Justice is waiting, Captain."
"Yes, of course."
It seemed there was nothing to be done.
"Ah, Captain Luther, an honor to see you again."
Giselle was hardly surprised to run into the madman Sulfur, even here outside the offices of the High Justice. He no longer even seemed a madman, just another part of a world gone entirely mad.
"An absolute honor," he frothed.
"Likewise," said Giselle numbly.
"I'm so lucky I caught you, what with both of us leaving so soon. My master has all manner of errands for me."
He gave a deep sigh.
"Never the slightest peace, eh?"
"No, I know what you mean."
"Still, an honor indeed to see you, and victorious at the contest. I saw the whole thing, you know. It was a privilege to bear witness."
He smiled broadly, different colored eyes glittering.
"And to think you were set on giving it up. But you stuck at it, just as I said you would. Yes, you did, and now you reap the rewards."
"The edge of the world,"
he whispered softly, as though to say the words out loud was to invite disaster.
"The edge of the world. Can you imagine? I envy you, indeed I do."
Giselle blinked.
"What?"
"What? Ha! What?" he says. "You are dauntless, sir, dauntless."
And Sulfur strode off across the wet square of marshals, chuckling to himself. Giselle was so bemused that he had not even the presence of mind to call him a damn idiot once he was out of earshot. One of Morovia's many clerks ushered him through an empty, echoing hallway towards a pair of enormous doors. He stopped before them, knocked. At an answering cry, he turned the handle and pulled one of the doors back, standing aside politely for Giselle to pass through.
"You may go in," he said quietly, after they had been stood there for a while.
"Yes, yes, of course."
The cavernous chamber beyond was eerily silent. Furniture was strangely sparse in that huge panelled space, and what there was seemed oversized, as though for the use of people much bigger than Giselle. It gave him the distinct feeling that he was arriving at his own trial. High Justice Morovia sat behind an enormous table, its surface polished to mirror brightness, smiling at Giselle with a kindly, if slightly pitying, expression. Marshal Verruz was seated to his left, staring down guiltily at his own blurry reflection. Giselle had not thought he could feel more depressed, but on seeing the third member of the group, he realized he had been wrong. Baez, wearing a self-satisfied smirk. He felt a mild surge of panic as the door shut behind him. The clicking of the latch felt like the clank of the heavy bolt on a prison cell. Baez started up from his chair and came round the table.
"Captain Luther, I am so glad you could join us."
The old man took Giselle's damp hand in both of his and squeezed it firmly, leading him forward into the room.
Thank you for coming. Thank you indeed. Of course.
As if he had been given a choice.
Well now, you're probably wondering what this is all about. Allow me to explain.
He stepped back and perched on the edge of the table like a kindly uncle holding forth to a child.
I and a few brave companions, chosen people, you understand, people of quality, are engaging on a great journey, an epic voyage, a grand adventure. I have little doubt that, should we be successful, there will be stories told of this for years to come, very many years.
Byers's forehead crinkled as he raised his white eyebrows.
Well, what do you think?
Giselle glanced nervously over at Morovia and Varouz, but they were giving no clues as to what was going on.
If I may... Of course, Giselle. I may call you Giselle, may I?
Yes. Well, yes, I suppose. The thing is, I was wondering what all this has to do with me.
Byers smiled.
We are short a man.
There was a long, heavy silence. A drop of water trickled down Giselle's scalp, dripped from his hair, ran down his nose, and pattered against the tiles beneath his feet. Horror crept slowly through his body, from his gut to the very tips of his fingers.
Me?
He croaked.
The road will be a long and difficult one, most likely beset with dangers. We have enemies out there, you and I, more enemies than you would believe. Who could be more useful than a proven swordsman, such as yourself, the winner of the contest, no less?
Giselle swallowed.
I appreciate the offer, really I do, but I am afraid I must decline. My place is with the army, you understand.
He took a hesitant step back towards the door.
I must go north. My ship will soon be sailing, and
I'm afraid it has sailed already, Captain,
said Morovia, his warm voice stopping Giselle dead in his tracks.
You need not concern yourself with that any longer. You will not be going to Angland.
But, Your Worship, my company
will find another commander,
smiled the High Justice, understanding, sympathetic, but horribly firm.
I appreciate your feelings, indeed I do, but we considered this more urgent. It is important that the Union be represented in this matter.
Terribly important,
murmured Varouz half-heartedly. Giselle blinked at the three old men. There was no escape. So this was his reward for winning the contest. Some crackpot voyage to who knew where in the company of a demented old man and a pack of savages? How he wished now that he had never started fencing, that he had never even seen a steel in his life. But wishing was useless. There was no way back.
I need to serve my country, mumbled Giselle.
Byers laughed.
There are other ways to serve your country, my boy, than being one corpse in a pile up there in the frozen north. We leave tomorrow.
Tomorrow? But my things are...
Don't worry, Captain.
And the old man slipped off the table and clapped him enthusiastically on the shoulder.
Everything is arranged. Your boxes were brought off the ship before it left. You have this evening to pick out some things for our journey, but we must travel light. Weapons, of course, and stout clothes for travelling. Make sure you pack a good pair of boots, eh? No uniforms, I'm afraid. They might attract the wrong kind of attention where we're going.
No, of course,
said Giselle miserably.
Might I ask, where are we going?
The edge of the world, my boy. The edge of the world.
Byers's eyes twinkled.
And back, of course. I hope.
Chapter 44 The Bloody Nine. Say one thing for Logan Ninefingers. Say that he's happy. They were leaving at last. Beyond some vague talk about the old empire and the edge of the world, he had no idea where they were going, and he didn't care. Anywhere but this cursed place would do for him, and the sooner the better. The latest member of the group didn't seem to share his good spirits. Luthar, the proud young man from the gate, the one who'd won the sword game, thanks to Byers's cheating. He'd barely said two words together since he arrived. Just stood there, face rigid and chalky pale, staring out of the window, bolt upright like he had a spear all the way up his arse. Logan ambled over to him. If you're going to travel with a man, and maybe fight alongside him, it's best to talk, and laugh if you can. That way you can get an understanding, and then a trust. Trust is what binds a band together, and out there in the wilds, that can make the difference between living or dying. Building that kind of trust takes time and effort. Logan reckoned it was best to get started early, and today he had good humor to spare. So he stood next to Luthar and looked out at the park, trying to dream up some common ground in which to plant the seeds of an unlikely friendship. Beautiful. Your home. He didn't think it was, but he was short on ideas. Luthar turned from the window, looked Logan haughtily up and down. What would you know about it? I reckon one man's thoughts are worth about as much as another's. Sneered the young man coldly. Then I suppose that's where we differ. He turned back to the view. Logan took a deep breath. The trust might be a while coming. He abandoned Luthar and tried Quai instead, but the apprentice was scarcely more promising, slumped in a chair, frowning at nothing. Logan sat down next to him. Aren't you looking forward to going home?
Home, mumbled the apprentice listlessly.
That's right. The old empire, or wherever.
You don't know what it's like there.
You could tell me, said Logan, hoping to hear something about the peaceful valleys, cities, rivers, and whatnot.
Bloody. It's bloody there, and lawless, and life is cheap as dirt.
Bloody and lawless. That all had an unpleasantly familiar smack to it. Isn't there an emperor or something?
There are many, always making war on one another, forging alliances that last a week, or a day, or an hour, before they scramble to be first to stab each other in the back. When one emperor falls, another rises, and another, and another, and meanwhile the hopeless and the dispossessed scavenge and loot and kill on the fringes. The cities dwindle, the great works of the past fall into ruin, the crops go unharvested, and the people go hungry. Bloodshed and betrayal, hundreds of years of it. The feuds have become so deep, so complicated, that few can tell any longer who hates who, and no one can say why. There's no need for reasons any more.
Logan made one last effort. You never know. Things might have got better.
Why?
Muttered the apprentice.
Why?
Logan was fumbling for a reply when one of the doors swung briskly open. Byers frowned around the room.
Where's Mel'jin? Quai swallowed. She left.
I can see she left. I thought I told you to keep her here.
You didn't tell me how,
muttered the apprentice. His master ignored him.
What the hell has become of that bloody woman? We must be away by noon. 3 days I've known her, and she already has me at the end of my rope.
He clenched his teeth and took a deep breath.
Find her, will you, Logan? Find her and bring her back.
What if she doesn't want to come back?
I don't know. Pick her up and carry her. You can kick her all the way back here as far as I'm concerned.
Easy to say, but Logan didn't fancy trying it. Still, if it had to be done before they could leave, it was best done now. He sighed, got up from his chair, and made for the door. Logan pressed himself into the shadows by the wall, watching.
Shit,
he whispered to himself. It would have to be now, just as they were about to leave. Pharaoh was 20 strides away, standing up tall, with a deeper-than-usual scowl on her dark face. There were 3 men gathered round her, masked men, all in black. Their sticks were down by their legs, behind their backs, kept half out of sight, but Logan had no doubt about what they had in mind. He could hear one of them talking, hissing through his mask, something about coming quietly. He winced. Coming quietly didn't sound like Pharaoh's style. He wondered whether he should slip away and tell the others. He couldn't really say he liked the woman much, not near enough to get his head broken for her. But if he left them to it, three against one, the chances were they'd have knocked her to pieces by the time he got back, however tough she was, and dragged her off to who knew where. He might never get out of this damn city then. He started judging the distance, thinking about how best to go at them, weighing his chances. But he'd been too long doing nothing, and his mind moved slowly. He was still working on it when Pharaoh suddenly jumped on one of them, yelling at the top of her voice, knocking him on his back. She gave him a couple of vicious-looking punches in the face before the others caught hold of her and dragged her up.
"Shit!" hissed Logan. The three of them wrestled, lurching around in the lane, knocking against the walls, grunting and swearing, kicking and punching, a tangle of flailing limbs. It seemed that time had run out for a clever approach. Logan gritted his teeth and charged towards them. The one on the floor had rolled to his feet, shaking the fuzz out of his head, while the other two struggled to get a good grip on Pharaoh. Now he lifted his stick high, arching back, ready to smash her on the skull. Logan let go a roar. The masked face snapped round, surprised-looking. "Huh?" Then Logan's shoulder crunched into his ribs, lifting him off his feet and sending him sprawling. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw someone swing a stick at him, but he'd got them off guard, and there was no real force behind it. He caught it across his arm, then pressed in under it and smashed the man right in the mask with his fists, a full-blooded punch with each hand. He reeled back, arms flopping, already falling. Logan grabbed him by two fistfuls of his black coat, hauled him into the air, and flung him upside down into the wall. He bounced off with a gurgle and crumpled on the cobbles. Logan spun round, fists clenched, but the last one was lying on his face with Pharaoh on top of him, one knee jammed into his back, pulling his head up by the hair and smashing his face into the road, shouting meaningless curses all the while.
"What did you fucking do?"
he shouted, grabbing her under the elbow and dragging her off. She tore free of his grip and stood there, panting, fists bunched up by her sides, blood leaking out of her nose.
"Nothing,"
she snarled. Logan took a cautious step back.
"Nothing? What's this, then?"
She bit off each word in her ugly accent and spat them at him.
"I don't know."
She wiped her bloody mouth with one hand, then froze. Logan glanced over his shoulder. Three more masked men running at them down the narrow lane.
"Shit! Move, Pink!"
Pharaoh turned and started running, and Logan followed her. What else could he do? He ran. The horrible, breathless running of the hunted, shoulders prickling for a blow in the back, sucking in air in gasps, the slapping footfalls of the men behind echoing around him. High white buildings flashed past on either side, windows, doors, statues, gardens. People, too, shouting as they dived out of the way or flattening themselves against the walls. He had no idea where they were, no idea where they were going. A man stepped out of a doorway right in front of him, a big sheaf of papers in his arms. They crashed together, tumbled to the ground, rolling over and over in the gutter, with papers flapping down all around them. He tried to get up, but his legs were burning. He couldn't see. There was a piece of paper across his face. He tore it away, felt someone grab him under the arm and haul him along.
"Ab Pink, move!"
Pharaoh. She wasn't even out of breath. Logan's lungs were bursting as he struggled to keep up with her, but she pulled steadily away, head down, feet flying. She charged through an archway just ahead, and Logan labored after her, boots skidding as he turned the corner. A great shadowy space, timbers reaching up high above, like a strange forest of square beams. Where the hell were they? There was bright light just ahead, open air. He plunged out into it, blinking. Pharaoh was just behind him, turning round slowly, breathing hard. They were in the middle of a circle of grass. a little circle. He knew where they were now, the arena where he'd sat among the crowds, watching the sword game. The empty benches stretched away all around. There were carpenters crawling amongst them, sawing and hammering. They'd already taken some of the benches to pieces near the back, and the supports stuck up high into the air, alone like giant rib bones. He put his hands on his wobbly knees and bent over, gasping for air, blowing spit out onto the ground.
"What? Now? This way!"
Logan straightened up with an effort and wobbled after her, but she was already on her way back.
"Not that way!"
Logan saw them. Black-masked figures again. The one at the front was a woman, tall, with a shock of red hair sprouting off her head. She padded towards the circle silently on the balls of her feet, waved her arm behind her, pointing the other two out to the sides, trying to get on the flanks around him. Logan cast about looking for a weapon, but there was nothing, just the empty benches and the high white walls beyond. Pharaoh was backing towards him, not 10 feet away. And beyond her, there were two more masks, creeping out around the enclosures with sticks in their hands. Five. Five altogether.
"Shit,"
he said.
"What the hell is keeping them?"
growled Baez, pacing the floor. Giselle had never seen the old man annoyed before, and for some reason it made him nervous. Whenever he came close, Giselle wanted to back away.
"I'm having a bath, dammit! Could be months before my next one, months!"
Baez stalked out of the room and slammed the bathroom door behind him, leaving Giselle alone with the apprentice. They were probably close enough in age, but they had nothing else in common, so far as Giselle could see, and he stared with unconcealed contempt. A sickly, weaselly, puny, bookish sort. Sulking like that, moping around, it was pathetic. Rude, too, damn rude. Giselle fumed silently. Just who did he think he was, the arrogant pup? What the hell did he have to be so upset about? It wasn't him who'd had his life stolen out from under him. Still, if he had to be left alone with one of them, he supposed it could have been worse. It might have been the moron Norseman with his fumbling, thick-tongued small talk, or that Gurkish witch staring and staring with her devil-yellow eyes. He shuddered to think of it. "People of quality," Baez had said. He would have laughed had he not been on the verge of tears. Giselle cast himself down on the cushions in a high-backed chair, but he found scant comfort there. His friends were on their way to Angland now, and he missed them already. West, Casper, Jallenhorm. Even that bastard Brint. On their way to honor, on their way to fame. The campaign would be long finished by the time he returned from whatever pit the old madman was leading him to, if he returned at all. Who knew when the next war would be, the next chance of glory? How he wished he was going to fight the Northmen. How he wished he was with Ardi. It seemed like an age since he was happy. His life was awful. Awful. He lay back listlessly in his chair, wondering if things could possibly be any worse.
"Gah!"
growled Logan as a stick cracked into his arm, then another into his shoulder, one in his side. He stumbled back, half on his knees, fending them away as best he could. He could hear Pharaoh screaming somewhere behind him, fury or pain he couldn't say, he was too busy taking a battering. Something smacked across his skull, hard enough to send him reeling away towards the seats. He fell on his face, and the front bench hit him in the chest, driving the air from his lungs. There was blood running down his scalp, on his hands, in his mouth. His eyes were watering from a blow to the nose. His knuckles were all skinned and bloody, near as ripped as his clothes were. He lay there for a moment, gathering whatever strength was left. There was a thick length of timber lying on the ground behind the bench. He grabbed hold of the end of it. It was loose. He dragged it towards him. It felt good in his hand, heavy. He sucked in air, summoning one more effort. He moved his arms and legs a little, testing them. Nothing broken. Except his nose, maybe, but it was hardly the first time. He heard footsteps coming up behind, slow footsteps taking their time. He pushed himself up, slowly, trying to look as though he was in a daze. Then he let go a roar and spun round, swinging the timber over his head. It broke in half across the masked man's shoulder with a mighty crack, half of it flying up off the turf and clattering.